supporters of a bold new green belt for the city take a big step forward. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, why the future looks bright for the city's new Emerald Trail. Get on the line now so we can tell you all about the Emerald Trail. It's 549-2937. Then later, we're spinning some of the beautiful noise of Northeast Florida in our Jacksonville Music Experience. Stick around for that listening session later in the hour. First, though, here's your COVID update. Yesterday, cases of the virus in Florida increased by 2,811 people, 44 new deaths overnight. The death toll in the state stands at 36,271. Go get your vaccine, everyone, if you have not already done so. Well, this morning, the future of the city's planned Emerald Trail is looking bright. The Jacksonville City Council Wednesday voted 14-4 to approve the idea of apportioning $132 million out of a potentially increased gas tax to help pay for this bold vision of a green belt that will encircle city neighborhoods. So what is the Emerald Trail? This morning, we've got an update. Kay Ahas is the CEO of Groundwork Jacksonville. That's the organization working on the Emerald Trail, and she's on the line. Hi, Kay.
Good morning, Melissa.
Great to have you. What are your questions, everyone, about the Emerald Trail? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. So a nice vote for Groundwork Jacks Wednesday night, Kay. Lots of support on the city council to help fund the Emerald Trail. You've got to be feeling pretty good this morning.
We are feeling pretty good. Groundwork really appreciates Councilman Carlucci and the entire city council for supporting a dedicated source of funding for the Emerald Trail.
Let's talk about this. $132 million would come out of a doubling of the gas tax. If that goes through, we would all pay 6 cents more a gallon for gas. You at Groundwork would get some of this money to build the Emerald Trail. And we've talked about this on the show a lot, but for people just tuning in for the first time on this, can you explain what the Emerald Trail is?
Yes, the Emerald Trail will be a 30-mile bike and pedestrian trail and linear park system that connects 15 urban core neighborhoods to each other in downtown and the St. John's River, and will be a green, resilient, beautiful linear park system.
So just picture a green belt, everyone, a trail that goes all around the urban core. Think of 295, I-295 in your car, but then picture it closer in, and it's a trail where you can walk and bike all around the city. And when we say it's a green belt, it's also going to be a park, green space. So, Kay, describe what people will experience and what they will see as they walk or bike or even skate along the Emerald Trail. What will it look like?
Well, first of all, it'll be safe, right? Jacksonville is known for being an unsafe area for pedestrians and bicyclists. And we are taking what is currently a very concrete and asphalt Jacksonville and taking a lot of that and turning it green. So as they are on the trail, they're going to be enjoying shade and native plants. And those native plants are also going to be attracting flora, wildlife like bees and birds and all that sort of thing. So we're bringing some nature into the urban core. And we're also connecting to 16 schools, 2 colleges, and 21 parks directly. So it's just taking kind of typical Jacksonville and turning it into a more lush, usable space for everybody.
We'll go to your calls in a moment. What are your questions and thoughts about the Emerald Trail? It's 549-2937. Give us a call. So you're building 19 miles of paths for walking and cycling, and then you'll weave that into actually a 30-mile network that connects, as you said, 15 neighborhoods and downtown and green space along Hogan's Creek and McCoy's Creek to the St. John's River. There's a map on your website where people can see how the trail will look spatially, how it will look on the map. But and we have a story about it on our website, too, at wjct.org. But, Kay, you know, I was on a trip to Atlanta a year or two ago with a good friend, and we went to dinner. I don't remember what neighborhood in the city we were in, but their green belt went right by the restaurant where we were sitting outside eating on the patio of this restaurant. So as we're sitting there eating at this place, I look to my left, and I see just this incredible array of plants and flowers all along this big sidewalk that is, you know, lit up. It's lit up so you can walk through it at night. And people are walking along right by me, and people on their bikes are whizzing right by us. And I said, "What is that?" And our dining companion, who was living in Atlanta, said, "Oh, that's the green belt." I forget what he called. I think he said it's the green line. I forget.
The belt line.
It's the belt line. He said, "That's the belt line. It's a green belt for the city. You can take it all the way around Atlanta on foot or on your bike." So that gave me a visual sense of what this is going to look like for Jacksonville. And this is, it's a model, but Atlanta is not the only city that has done this kind of green belt. Is that right?
No, a lot of cities have done it. The New York High Line, Chicago 606, smaller cities have done similar things. What's really cool about this is before we have broken any ground, we have local developers acquiring property to become part of the Emerald Trail ecosystem. So, for example, on the La Villa Link, which is the first project that will be under construction this summer, JWB is going to be building townhomes on Lee Street with retail below. The Union Terminal building, developers out of Atlanta, the impetus that made them pull the trigger on that was the Emerald Trail, because they know what the Beltline had done for Atlanta. There's a local developer that bought a block of properties near McCoy's Creek. Another person that recently came to Jacksonville and bought property next to McCoy's Creek. And the really cool thing is, the uses they want to have will activate the trail and vice versa.
So developers are seeing this and snapping up property now along the trail.
Yeah.
What did the Beltline do for Atlanta in terms of cultural and economic and neighborhood development?
So the Atlanta Beltline has been in development for over a decade, and they are very thoughtful about what they're doing. Well, first they have, you know, it's a raised rail line already, so they kind of know where they're going. But it has spawned rehab of historic structures. It has spawned new development. On the downside, it also has encouraged gentrification. And so that's one of the things Jacksonville wants to address, because our vision is that it will revitalize neighborhoods without displacing current residents and bringing those residents more prosperity, that there's enough space out there in terms of abandoned buildings and vacant land to bring in economic diversity without displacement. That's our big vision.
And of course, getting this taxpayer money is a huge shot in the arm, because you had been fundraising privately for the Emerald Trail. But this is a huge project, and it really, honestly, couldn't likely be done without some city support. So how big of a deal was this vote the other night?
Well, it's a huge deal. Until we finished the design of the first project, we really, and got bids on that project, that was when we knew how much it was going to cost over time. So before then, it was just a guess. So now we kind of have a much better idea of what the entire trail is going to cost. And that's why we had started talking about needing a secure source of construction funding, because that tells the private sector that, okay, the city's committed to this, so I feel good about making my private investment. So we still will be out there raising private dollars, because we will still need that. But without a dedicated source of government construction funding, you're right, it could not happen.
When people walk along, say, the north bank of the St. John's River, which has a beautiful footpath, and you can do a little bit of it on the south bank, too, I'm trying to think of visual examples for people who are just now hearing about this, what this experience will be like for them. That might give you a slight sense of what this is going to be like and what a game-changing new piece of work it will be for the city. Because as you said, Kay, we are a car-dependent city. Mm-hmm. We are not a walkable, bikeable city. People could theoretically start using the Emerald Trail to get around the city in a whole new way. I mean, they'll use it recreationally just for enjoyment, but they can also use it in a logistical way too, right?
Yeah, it creates more transportation equity because you can get around 30 miles without having to have a car. So absolutely. I'm trying to think of how to describe. On our website, we have before and after renderings of the actual design of the Villa Link, which will be under construction this summer. There's also renderings of the McCoys Creek project. Phase one of that project will be under construction in the next couple of months. And so the creeks, both McCoys and Hogan's Creek, are going to be the gems of the trail because there's so much more green space, right, around those creeks than a typical downtown street. And so McCoys Creek is going to be awesome in terms of it's going to have three different stream types that you'll have access to. You'll have access to kayaking. There'll be park spaces. It's going to be amazing.
It really is exciting when you look at the video and the renderings of this, and it's moving ahead. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Kay Ahas, the CEO of Groundwork Jacksonville. This week, the Jacksonville City Council voted in favor of approving a gas tax increase for the city. The final vote on this will be in a week, but it looks like it's going to go through, which means you'll pay 6 cents more at the pump. And a big chunk of that money, likely now, will go toward funding the Emerald Trail, the planned green belt that will be a walk and bike path going all around the city. Here's a tweet from a listener. I lived in the D.C. area in Northern Virginia, and it had the most incredible urban trail network that connects all of the urban neighborhoods, the Potomac River, and D.C. proper. It is simply incredible and super for quality of life. Good for us. We've got to get this through. Kay, you had a big showing of supporters of the Emerald Trail at the City Council Wednesday night, letting the representatives know that it has public support. There was a whole campaign around that, wasn't there?
There was. And what's really amazing to us, Melissa, is that, you know, when we started, we said this has to be a community project, not a government project. You know, the community needs to have skin in the game. The community needs to believe it's theirs. The community needs to help us maintain it over time. And it was our supporters who were the impetus in getting us here today talking about the $132 million. It's pretty amazing.
We also have a tweet from another listener letting us know that in Orlando, they're planning a bicycle beltway, an Orlando urban trail, a very similar type of project. Let us know your thoughts about the Emerald Trail. It's 549-2937. Bill in Mandarin. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. If I may, as I said, a little cold water, perhaps. I do have two concerns. One is, and perhaps your person can answer this, does the bill say, use the word shall in terms of its expenditures and time frame? And then second, my concern is that whenever these great 25- and 30-year plans, somehow the money doesn't quite get there to complete the, you know, objective.
Okay, sure. Yeah, thanks, Bill. Kay, what about his questions?
So I'm going to tell you what I think, but it needs to be confirmed. I believe what the City Council is doing or has done is this will be on the JTA list of projects. And I believe the bill now says that JEA is required to do the specific list of projects. So I think that's how that will be taken care of. One of the things we're going to start looking at is how quickly can we get this project done? Because one of our goals is to work with every neighborhood we're going through as our design partners. And so we don't want to go too fast that that's not happening. Because again, this is a community project. So we're going to be looking at all of that in terms of figuring out the right time frame that gets it done as quickly as we can, but also gets it done in the right way.
Comments on our Facebook page. Here's one from Catherine. The Emerald Trail is a huge opportunity to enhance all of our lives and attract visitors and private investment. But the promises to replace septic tanks are long overdue. Funding the Emerald Trail before addressing the removal of septic tanks in the city is to continue the disenfranchisement of those same residents who have been dismissed over and over again. So, Kay, for those who don't support the taxpayer money going toward this project, what's your response that there are other more critical needs that should come first?
Well, it's my understanding that the City Council is going to be passing a bill that dedicates either $50 million or $100 million over the next 2 years for septic tank removal. There are a lot of needs out there, but I guess what I would say is that the Emerald Trail is a major infrastructure project in Jacksonville's underserved communities. So this fabulous transformative amenity is going exactly where the need is. And so it's a quality of life issue. And it's, so I guess my stance is I'd like for us to be able to do both at the same time, because
mm-hmm. Yeah. Can we do more than one thing at a time?
Exactly. Right. And what this is this improves health. It's free recreation. It's a social connector. I mean, there's so many benefits to this. With every dollar spent on trails, there's almost a direct medical cost savings of $3. What studies have found is that the people that use the trails the most and benefit the most are the folks that live next to the trails. So think about where this trail is going, and it is absolutely, in Groundwork's mind, an environmental, a social justice project.
More comments on Facebook letting us know that Miami is working on a similar green belt. Follow the Emerald Trail, says one listener. I'm sure you're getting a lot of Wizard of Oz comments lately, Kay.
Well, actually, no, I think that was the first one I have heard.
Okay. Well, you know what you ought to do when you open this thing up? You should do some of it, paint some of it yellow.
And
let people dance down it like with some Wizard of Oz music. Okay, here's another question.
That would be awesome. Are you going to lead that parade?
You know what? I'll show up to the opening of an envelope if there's free food. I've been in media for many, many years, and that is what we do.
Okay.
I'm just joking around. Here's another comment. Will it be easier with the Emerald Trail to immediately launch a non-motorized hand launch on Hogan's Creek?
Whoa. I don't know if I know what that is, Melissa. So here's what's happening on Hogan's Creek. We are starting that ecological restoration project June 1. So as you know, you have to restore a creek before you can add the trail. So the creek restoration gets designed and the trail gets designed as part of that restoration project. So that will be a little bit longer term before that gets done. So I don't know the answer to the hand launch thing.
Okay. Well, maybe something you can follow up later. But a big step forward for this project. And so you're doing this in chunks, too. There's a little piece of it. The S line, isn't there, that people can mm-hmm. check out already?
Yeah, there's an existing S line rail trail that the city did, I think, around 2008. And part of what one of the segments we're doing is connecting the southern and northern ends of the S line so that there's a part next to Andrew Robinson Elementary School that's not done, and so it's an unsafe condition for kids. Mm-hmm. It also will be going through the Phoenix Art District, so that's one of the ones we're going to be designing any day now as well.
Okay, and if you're just tuning in, we are talking about the Emerald Trail with Kay Ahas, the CEO of Groundwork Jacksonville. This week, the City Council took a preliminary vote to approve more than $130 million out of gas tax funding for the Emerald Trail. And they also voted in favor of increasing the gas tax overall, even though there is a lot of opposition to it out there. It likely is not going to go to a referendum. It likely is going to be supported by your local representatives on the Jacksonville City Council. And as we talk about the Emerald Trail, you can look at a video of this at groundworkjacksonville.org. Stories about it on our website, too, at wjct.org, as you try to get a visual on what this will look like for the city. We're going to take one more call on this. It's Letitia in Jacksonville. Letitia, good morning.
Good morning. Well, first I would like to say, you know, like, yeah, how important and good will be to have the Emerald Trail going on in our city. But also comment that, you know, we all know that first the city already has funds for this and the tax raise and the gas after the trail was concluded will not be lifted. So we will always be paying our taxes over this project.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Letitia. So you're not in favor of it?
You know, they are improving these areas in the city, and then the real estate will raise, and the population that should be served by the service will actually, you know, be cleaned off the area because they won't be able to afford living in the area. So,
okay, Letitia, thanks for that. So, Kay, you addressed some of those comments earlier that these types of projects can lead to gentrification and that there are downsides to them. So what about that?
So we've been working with the neighborhoods along McCoy's Creek for the past 3 years, and we are now partnering with the neighborhood organization in LISC Jacksonville to create an equity plan that will address affordable housing, workforce development, gray and green infrastructure. That community came together and said, here's our vision. This is what we want in terms of, you know, history and culture, all of those sorts of things. So we are working with them on an equitable development plan to implement that vision. And that's what we'd like to do with every neighborhood that the trail will go through. So we are committed. I mean, our vision is that folks get to stay in place and prosper. And we're going to need a whole lot of partners and cooperation to do that. But it is critical to Groundwork's mission that that be the outcome.
More at groundworkjacksonville.org. Check it out. It's the planned Emerald Trail, the Greenbelt for the city. Kay Ahaus, the CEO at Groundwork Jax. Thanks so much. And much more still ahead. Later in the hour, we'll take a listen to the beautiful noise of Northeast Florida. It's a listening session in our JME, Jacksonville Music Experience, with local musicians. But up next.
This has definitely changed how we take care of patients, and it's become the standard of care.
How one local hospital is radically reducing the need for invasive open heart surgery with an innovative new procedure. We'll be right back. Well, a Jacksonville hospital has greatly reduced the need for open heart surgery. They do it by using a much less invasive procedure called TAVR, T-A-V-R. What is it? Well, I spoke with Dr. Samer Garris. He's with Ascension St. Vincent's. Take a listen. Hi, Dr. Garris. Good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, great talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, a big milestone at Ascension St. Vincent's. You've reached 1,000 transcatheter aortic valve replacements, or TAVR. As we talk about this, let's talk about first heart valve disease and the dangers it poses to people with the condition. Tell us about that.
Yes, thank you for asking. That's a critically important subject because as the population gets older and people want to be active, they want to enjoy their families and the quality of life, we're seeing, and there is a lot more heart disease, and especially valvular heart disease, which tends to happen over time. So aortic valve disease and mitral valve disease tend to get worse over age. So patients in their 70s, 80s, even older in their 90s can have very severe disease that can prevent them from doing the things they want, spending time with their family. It leads to significant shortness of breath. People can be bedridden. And in the past, we had very few options. We could only open patients' chest and do valve replacement. But now, fortunately, being able to do many of these procedures and replace the valves through a minimally invasive, just through a needle and a catheter from the leg, we're able to treat a lot more patients and give them a quality of life that they're seeking. And even patients can live longer if we're able to treat them with the valve replacements and so forth.
Is it fair to call this a game changer, this procedure? It's not eliminating the need for heart surgery, but it's certainly transforming the way you go about this for some patients. Is that fair to say?
I think that's definitely fair to say. Now we're about 10 years into the approval of the aortic valve replacement, and now it's become the standard of care. So initially, of course, in the beginning, open heart surgery was the standard of care, but I would say at this time, patients with isolated aortic valve replacement need, the standard of care has now become catheter valve replacement. There are some patients that still need open heart surgery if they have other issues, or if patients develop valve disease and they're really young in their 50s and so forth. But in general, this definitely changed how we take care of patients, and it's become the standard of care for most patients, and also we're able to treat patients that we couldn't treat at all in the past.
This is really innovative stuff. You're actually replacing the valve through an artery in the thigh. Clinical trials have found this is superior to open heart surgery for low-risk patients, correct?
Yes, I think there's still definitely a lot of debate out there, but there's a clear acceptance now with the guidelines and most physicians that the standard of care is transcatheter aortic valve replacement for most patients because it has shown superiority. Of course, obviously, there's going to be less hospital stays and so forth, but definitely also we're seeing better outcomes with regard to stroke and mortality and even quality of life over time.
Okay, so how does someone know if they have this kind of heart disease?
Well, this is really important because a lot of patients, as they get older, they just feel like they're tired or, you know, they're short of breath because they're aging. But certainly it's important to see your doctor and be evaluated. One of the more common ways that patients get evaluated is if a doctor listens to their chest and they have a significant murmur. A lot of people have murmurs, but the aortic stenosis have a very significant murmur, and you can hear it pretty well, better than most other valve problems in the heart. And of course, the next step would be just a simple ultrasound. We do an echocardiogram or an ultrasound of the heart, and that gives us that diagnosis immediately. So it's important to talk to your doctor about the fact that you're not able to do the same things, that you're now more short of breath, that your doctor can listen to you, obtain an ultrasound, and get a diagnosis. And luckily, most of those patients can be helped in a fairly prompt manner.
You're seeing an increase in these kinds of patients because we have an aging population. More people having these issues, especially in the South, where we have higher risk factors like obesity, diabetes, and tobacco use and such. But raising awareness about this type of procedure, TAVR, is a big priority at Ascension St. Vincent's. Not enough people know about this.
Yes, absolutely. So two parts to that. One of them is, of course, there is more patients with valve problems because of the population aging and the population wanting to be active, but also awareness. So a lot of people have the disease, and even doctors, sometimes they have patients and they think, oh, we couldn't do anything in the past. They don't, you know, some of them still don't realize or want to send their patients for valve replacements because they think it's a big open heart surgery. So there's definitely patient and physician awareness of a treatment that's available, and it's an excellent therapy with really a very, very low complication rates, relatively speaking, to other treatments in the same manner. So aortic valve disease can have a worse prognosis than most other heart problems and certainly most cancers. So identifying the disease in patients, having awareness for patients and physicians can change people's lives.
So this is minimally invasive. This is almost like outpatient surgery, right? Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's almost like outpatient surgery. Vast majority of our patients go home the next day. So patients come in, they have a procedure, they're up and walking, and most of them are home the next day. Some patients are a day or two extra, but most patients are able to go home and spend the next day with their family doing whatever they want.
If you want more information about this, call Ascension St. Vincent's at 904-308-VALVE or 904-308-8258. And it's great to talk to you, Dr. Samargaris, at Ascension St. Vincent's about this TAVR procedure making a huge difference for patients who in the past would have gotten traditional open heart surgery, but this is a really innovative, new, and less invasive option. So, doctor, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, as we've been reporting, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and a local group is hosting its first in-person event in 15 months this Sunday. It's Stronger Than Stigma, a local nonprofit dedicated to mental health advocacy, and it's for millennials by millennials. Founder and CEO Gabby Irvin is on the line to tell us more. Hey, Gabby.
Hi, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great. Good to talk to you. So you're having a concert and conversation this Sunday at the Brick and Beam in Springfield. This sounds great. It's a great venue, too. So what's on the agenda?
Like you said, we have not been in person in 15 months. Completely by accident, like a silver lining of the pandemic, is that we switched to virtual programming and were able to go global overnight. Our audience completely shifted so that we were able to touch people outside of Jacksonville. And by the end of all of our programming last year, we had touched 50,000 people from around the world. So that was wild.
That's great.
You know, yeah. So we grew exponentially, and now we're back to serving our local community because we really miss being in person with everyone. And Brick and Beam, you're right, is an amazing venue, and they have agreed to host us. And we're taking over their back patio to feature Pamela Elaine and Indy, hosted by radio personality Catalina Selvain. And it'll be a great evening filled with music and then also honest conversation around mental health and its place in musical expression and its influence on these two artists. So we're really looking forward to it.
And people are craving in-person gatherings, and they are needing to talk about this because the pandemic has been just difficult for all of us and taken a toll on all of our mental health. So are you anticipating some pretty raw, I guess, conversations?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly what Pamela and Indy will share with us, because I'm sure that, you know, mental health has probably always been part of their influence, and using music has probably been always a coping mechanism. But I think that we're going to be the first to hear how the pandemic affects their creative process. And so that'll be really special. And then I always know, too, that whenever we gather people in our community, you know, cool things tend to happen. People connect on a deeper level and just recognize that they're in good company with people, you know, who get it and who will be open to receiving whatever it is they need to set.
Now, your organization is called Stronger Than Stigma, and it's aimed at millennials. Tell us why you have the focus on that particular age group.
Sure. So a couple of my friends and I actually started this organization close to 8 years ago now, while we were juniors at the University of Florida down in Gainesville. And at the time we were students, and we were noticing that students, when they get into trouble, they don't talk to professors or the administration, they talk to their peers. And because we ourselves were millennials, we were like, you know, who better to know about our own struggles and who have walked in a mile in each other's shoes, you know, who better than us to kind of change the culture around reaching out for help? There was this toxic culture, and we realized it wasn't just on our campus. It was a microcosm, you know. The rest of the world is like that. And so we set about to change the culture around asking for help and recognize we were in that sweet spot where you know, older generations would listen to us. And so hopefully, you know, we could change their minds. But then also we knew that we were influential to Gen Z and younger, who would hopefully look up to us in a way where we would get rid of the stigma for them, so that they would never have to deal with embarrassment or shame when it comes to reaching out for help for their mental health.
That's why your organization is called Stronger Than Stigma. We are talking all this month on the show about Mental Health Awareness Month, and the whole idea is talking about mental health challenges and mental illness reduces stigma. We shouldn't have stigma around mental health, but we do. So how do you work to combat that?
I truly believe that it has to do with conversations, real, open, honest dialogue. And usually the conversations that change lives are one-on-one between people who care about each other. And I think that sometimes it's the hardest to have a conversation with somebody like a friend or family member that can really help you turn that corner, but it's the most important thing. And I think that it's challenging a lot to be on the receiving end of somebody's emotions or, you know, challenges. But I think that recognizing it as an honor that somebody came to you, and then, you know, actively listening to what they have to say. It's not your job to fix them. They just, you know, they need to know that it's safe to express themselves. And I really think that that's what it's all about.
Let's talk too about some other wins you've had at Stronger Than Stigma. You were recently selected to be partners with MTV's inaugural Action Day. You also just got a $15,000 capacity grant from the Dolores Barr Weaver Legacy Fund.
Yes.
So great news on both fronts.
Thank you so much. Yes. No, it's been wild. We were selected to be part of this Mental Health Action Day, which fortuitously is today, actually. So 1,000 organizations were selected from around the world, and we're all driving action in and around Mental Health Awareness Month. So throughout the month, we've all been logging the things that we've been doing and connecting, and MTV like knows who we are now. That's really cool. And, you know, we hosted a panel actually last weekend on cancel culture and its effect on mental health, and they loved that. So, That's been a huge honor to be, you know, bumped up and recognized on that national level. And then, you know, Mrs. Weaver has been a supporter of ours since 2018, when she funded our Nobody's Happy comedy tour. And then she helped fund The Living Room in 2019. And now to have her, you know, trust in us to to use this $15,000 capacity grant to help grow the organization in a way that will make us even more sustainable. I'm just thrilled and grateful.
And this is a model that I think you've hit upon that's really great. Bringing people together just to talk, that's therapeutic in and of itself.
Yes. I think, I always say too, it matters to me what we put on the stage in the sense that I want it to be quality programming, but at the same time, that's what brings us together. And I think the real power is who's in the audience and whether they can look to their left and right and recognize like, man, we're all here for the same reason. Like we're all in this together. I can talk to this person. We can become friends. And that's the magic of what we do.
We're talking with Gabby Ervin, the founder and CEO of Stronger Than Stigma. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And so all this month on the show, we've been highlighting organizations and people in this community doing what they can to help improve the mental health of the First Coast. And God knows, after the pandemic, we can all use as much of this as possible. How have you gotten through the pandemic yourself, Gabby? What's it been like for you personally?
Oh, man. It's been interesting. I think that the pandemic has changed each and every one of us in some way, shape, or form. So there were months that were easier and there were months that were a lot harder. And I think that having a support system was huge. I had a very small bubble of people that I was comfortable seeing and making sure that I protected my parents, who I'm lucky enough to share Jacksonville with. But also I think for me, getting vaccinated was a big turning point of kind of just feeling like my anxiety around keeping people safe and myself safe. I could just take a deep breath and recognize like, okay, the future is coming and the future looks good.
Yeah, I agree. I felt the same way. So everybody go on Eventbrite, get your tickets now for Concert and Conversation this Sunday, 5:30 p.m., at Brick and Beam. That's at 1101 North Main Street in Jacksonville in Springfield. Backyard music sessions, great conversation, and it all supports Stronger Than Stigma. Concert and Conversation, search that at Eventbrite. And thank you so much, Gabby. She's Gabby Ervin, founder and CEO.
I'm actually Gabrielle Magid. I'm sorry, Melissa.
What? All right.
Yeah.
How did I did not write this intro. I'm going to throw someone under the bus right now. So it's my fault. Ultimately, it's my fault because I should have double checked. So sorry, Gabby. I don't know how that got messed up in our script. I'm so sorry about that. And have a great time.
Thank you so much. You too, Melissa.
Okay. In a moment, the musical standouts of the First Coast highlighted in our Jacksonville Music Experience. We'll be right back.
CNS Healthcare is offering an agitation associated with Alzheimer's dementia research study. Has Alzheimer's changed your loved one? Have they shown verbal or physical symptoms of agitation? Learn more at cnshealthcare.com. Move Day, a Suddeth company, is dedicated to providing personalized and dependable local moving services in the Jacksonville area. Move Day's team of professional movers provides quotes and real-time move tracking technology. More info at movedaymover.com.
I'm Carol Hills from The World. Each day, our program gives you a chance to step outside our borders, to hear what's going on around the planet, and to hear how events in America are seen across Africa, Europe, Asia, and the Americas. Our producers and reporters dig deep to find stories that connect you with what's happening worldwide. That's why we call it The World. Join us.
Today at 3 on WJCT News 89.9.
The CDC has loosened its COVID guidelines for people who are vaccinated. But in India, the pandemic is rampaging across the country. On the next Fresh Air, New York Times reporter Jeffrey Gettleman joins us from New Delhi, where he says sickness and death are everywhere. He's reported from war zones, was kidnapped in Iraq, but finds this frightening in a different way. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
It's the moment both abortion rights and anti-abortion advocates have been waiting for. One side with gritted teeth, the other with bated breath. The Supreme Court has agreed to hear an abortion ban case that many see as a direct challenge to Roe v. Wade. What does a recent string of bans, including a big one in Texas, signal for the future of Roe? Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. It's time for our monthly Jacksonville Music Experience DJ Sessions. And today we're featuring some of the best summer jams from local artists. Our regular music contributor, Matt Shaw, is on the line to cue all of this great music up. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
All right. So this isn't your dad's yacht rock. We're going to begin by explaining this. This is contemporary local music that you can pair with a cold drink and a warm summer breeze. So tell us what you've got picked.
Yeah. So I think we often think about summer music as kind of being breezy, carefree, radio-friendly fare. You know, you mentioned yacht rock, Jimmy Buffett, Eagles, that kind of thing. Maybe some reggae. But Northeast Florida, I think, with its diverse music scene, subtropical climate, et cetera, I think, you know, summer jams could be one of our main exports. So these three songs that I have today, I think, are all perfectly timed to invoke summer. They're all contemporary, as you said, not your dad's yacht rock. So I wanted to start with one from Leo Sun. The song's called When You Wake Up. And I think it's one of the most exciting debuts of any local artist. I'm really excited by this song. Leo Sun, When You Wake Up, features this like languid pedal steel guitar, some nice auxiliary percussion, and Leo Sun's voice, they push it around like so casually as if in like a Chase lounge instead of a recording booth. So let's go ahead and cue up When You Wake Up from Leo Sun.
I can almost taste the margarita right now. So, yeah, that's great. I love that.
Point. Yeah, it's really nice. And that came out of Friends recording with the help of local musician Taylor Neal on production duties there. That's a Springfield-based studio that's been producing a lot of cool music.
There's so much great talent in this very part of the world. It's so great to get your insights into this, Matt. Okay, so tell us about your next cut, Memories of You, from local rapper, producer, singer Eddie Bravo.
Yeah, Eddie Bravo, new song is called Memories of You. It's ultra chill, nice melodies over this super interesting kind of Afro beat. It reminds me a lot of some of the popular, like, Afro-pop artists that are making noise right now, like Kida Cudz. Let's listen to that one, Memories of You by Eddie Bravo.
What would you like to teach me in the dojo? Yeah. She like to swing it from the east out to the west. I like to jump up on your body and caress. I put my hand between your thighs and make a mess. Now I'm cranking out the temperature, I bet make you undress. I know the color coming, but look, I gotta come correct.
Love that too. Okay, and let's talk a little bit about him before we move on. Eddie is Nigerian born, or he shares some sonic DNA, I should say, with Nigerian born UK based Afro pop singer Kida Cudz. So he has some influences that come from all over the world.
Yeah, that he's done a lot of like electronic based stuff in the past, and so this new cut I just thought sort of stood out and is different than the things that he's done before. But he's really diverse and multi talented in kind of his production style. So
okay, and last but not least, you've got Idle Mind. Tell us about Idle Mind.
Yeah, this is an indie pop artist goes by the name of Pawn. He's making some really nice. He's had a couple singles come out that are very radio friendly, very laid back kind of pop music, all out of Rockbot Studios here in Jacksonville. And I think this artist on at the radio's going, he's definitely going to land like a top 40. I wouldn't be surprised if he's on top 40 radio at some point. It's just really palatable, like pleasant fare, kind of radio ready. So this new song is called Idle Mind. So let's listen to that one. And the world's a feast. Summer days, summer nights. Lose it all, close your eyes. It's okay, waste your time.
Beautiful. And let me just make a quick plug for our Jacksonville Music Experience, where we feature lots of local artists on multiple different radio stations that you can stream at wjct.org/Jacks Music. Check it out. And
Matt, we have a Spotify channel now, Jacksonville Music Experience. If you just search that on your Spotify, you can listen there. We've got a new playlist called Fresh Squeeze up there that has all the songs we played this morning. As well as some other new cuts from around the country.
Fantastic. Yeah, check that out on Spotify. And thank you, Matt Shaw, always bringing us the amazing local talent of Northeast Florida. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
We're going to close with Leo Sun, When You Wake Up. Enjoy the music, everyone. And we'll be back tomorrow at 9 a.m. for our Friday Roundtable. Have a great day.
Let's just be friends and pretend that I'm done wishing that I could be better. Everything you ask for. I'm sorry.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.